History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories there that should not go untold. And really, they don't have to go untold if we'll just take a little time to ask a few questions and, more importantly, be patient enough to listen. We'll be amazed by some of the things that come back our way from some of our more experienced neighbors. And when you're 99 years old, you're pretty experienced. We're going to learn that today. But we're here to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, yeah, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often we are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. I'm in one of my favorite places today in downtown Fresno, California, the Veterans Memorial Museum, home of the Legion of Valor, which had been closed for about a year because of the pandemic, but is back open now every day except Sunday from 10 to 3. And if you come here on a Tuesday, you are sure to find 99-year-old Bill Biggers, one of the volunteer docents here at the museum. Let's start there, Bill, before I ask you about your childhood and take you way back. How long have you been volunteering here now at the Veterans Memorial Museum?
About 10 years.
What was it that made you want to do that?
Well, I was busy with so many other volunteer places, like the Fresno Police Officers Association. I remember that for many years. And I just had too much going to get down here. But once Mike Harris got over here, I decided I better be here.
You got roped in. I love it. And you mentioned the Police Officers Association. Do you know, are you the oldest living Fresno Police Department alum?
Yes, I am.
And you're going to hit the century mark in a few months.
November.
It's coming. All right. Well, I'm sure we'll talk more about this museum and why it's so special to you, but let's go way back. You were born in Oklahoma, right?
Yes.
With a whole lot of sisters.
Well, just one sister when I was. I just had one. The others come later.
And you probably don't even remember anything about Oklahoma. You were so young when you left there.
Yeah, I left there on my birthday. I was 2 years old. But I have a lot of relatives at the time back there, so I got back about every 2 years and visited. My grandparents lived there.
And what was it that brought your family out to California from Oklahoma?
Well, my dad came out here. His father passed away when my dad was 14. He played with an Oklahoma Indian team, the only white man on it, and they traveled around Oklahoma playing different states for 2 years. And then he came here to Fresno, to Kearney Park, went to work for Kearney Park. And he worked there for about 2 years, and then the war came on. Now, while he was here, he played ball with an Italian team. And then he went to the service in World War I. And afterwards, he went back to his hometown in Oklahoma and married my mother. And they came back out here to the same station, and he lived in a little house right by the front gate called the Gatehouse. And that was part of his duty to lock up the park and reopen it in the morning. And he again went to play with the Italian club, but he found out Fig Garden wanted him more. So he went to play ball with the Fig Garden, and they furnished him a house out near there some. I don't exactly know where, but anyway, they stayed there for a couple of years, and then they went back.
He must have been quite a ball player.
He was a good player. He probably would have majors if it, happened a bit back, but then that was not available.
What position did he play?
He was either second base, shortstop, and was a pretty good pitcher.
And you said a few things there that people who live like you do in the Fresno area will recognize, but the people who are listening in other parts, they say, Kearney Park, what's that all about? So there was a man named Kearney who was a real pioneer here, who grew all kinds of things in this area, and his mansion is now a museum out in West Fresno.
Yes, my dad, when he came out here, they were leveling land using Fresno scrapers and mules, and they would level the land and build up dikes where they could flood the land and wash the alkali down. And he done that both times he's out here, because there was nothing planted out there. The big home out there, that was his home, and he hadn't built his deal yet. The ground for it, might be still out there where it was raised, a raised area. That was where he was going to build the big place that never got built. So now they call that the museum.
And you heard all these stories from your father as you were growing up.
Yes.
And you mentioned there that in addition to being a ball player, your father served in World War I.
Yes.
What do you know about what he did in World War One?
Not much. He didn't talk about it.
He was in the Army?
Yes, the Army. I know he worked as an aide to the nurses when they had the big flu epidemic and so many people died.
Yeah, over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, it's been almost 100 years since you were born. So your father has been out here to California, experienced a taste of life, but he's back in his native Oklahoma. That's where you're born. And when you're 2 years old, the family comes out here. What do you remember about your childhood in California? What was it like back then?
Not much, because we didn't stay out here too long, and we went back to Oklahoma. My dad took over farming the property owned by my mother's father. Then they came back out here, and we never went back.
So then you're here in California, and you have another sister and another sister and another sister. You end up the only boy with six sisters. I have to imagine somewhere along the line you were hoping that a little brother would come along.
I didn't have time because I had to stay busy. I had to do all the yard work. Plus, it was invariable that I had to learn to cook, too.
And these are the years of the Great Depression.
Yes.
How did you see that manifested where you were living?
Well, my dad had come out here. He first worked down south for a short period, and then he went out, ended up out here at Biola, worked out there for a professor by the name of Appling, and then he worked for Dr. Hollingsworth. And then he got this job as the superintendent of a large ranch down at Orange Cove. And that's where I started school. First grade was Orange Cove. But I can remember the Depression very vividly, because they were constantly people coming looking for work. I can remember people from the Midwest coming out here. And one piece of property, we had 100 acres of figs. And the only deal was the two little shacks on that, about 10 by 10, and a big windmill that pumped into a tank similar to what you'd have on a cattle farm. And the guys had fresh water and places to take a bath, and they slept out underneath the fig trees. But I can remember men and their wives coming with children in the back and an old car that's barely running, and off to work for nothing, just for flour and stuff to make food for the kids. My mother had always raised a bunch of chickens. She usually had 300 or 400. I had to milk two cows, and I had saddle horses. So my job was also doing that and feeding and gathering those eggs. But she would give them, we always had extra butter, and she'd give them eggs and stuff to eat. And a lot of them, we had a big packing shed in the back where they slept with two fumigating houses that they couldn't close the door on, but they could they could leave them slightly open and be out of the weather. And they also had electricity down there, so they had lights. So a lot of people from Oklahoma, well, I say Oklahoma because they called them Okies.
Sure.
Didn't make any difference which state they came from. They were called Okies. But anyway, we had a lot of them that come there and stayed and would sleep in those houses, especially if they stayed, some of them would stay year-round, until they got enough money to bring the family out. But it was a sad deal to see so many people out of work. I can remember when Roosevelt came in, he started getting rid of the potatoes. They would dye those potatoes purple, and one section of land was all wheat, and they would dump those potatoes on them, but they couldn't get the purple dye on all the potatoes, and people would go over there and get the ones that didn't have dye on them. It was amazing to see that, but it didn't hurt the farmland because we plowed it under anyway.
So you had to work pretty hard as a young man.
Yes, I did. I stayed busy, and Dad insisted that we stay busy because we had a lot of figs, and we had a lot of chores to pick up figs. We got 10 cents for a 40-pound box. That would buy our school clothes. So, yes, we stayed quite busy. Me and my sisters, as they got a little older, they too had to work for the school clothes. Although it was good for us, we had no problems because our home was furnished. Everything was furnished for us, electricity and all that stuff, by some rich, very rich people in San Francisco. The property was owned by them. And Dad run the property just like it was his.
Just an aside, I love figs, and we know that this area, Fresno and Madera County, grow 100% of the figs that are domestically produced in the United States. And I'm just curious, for you, having to work with figs for so long and pick up the good ones and the bad ones that are real messy, did that make you sick of figs, or do you still like them?
No, I love figs, especially Black Missions.
So how'd you get along with all your sisters?
We always got along good. We never had any problems growing up, yeah.
And do you remember at those early ages as a boy having some idea in your mind, hey, when I grow up, here's what I want to do with my life?
Well, yes. Of course, in high school, I had mechanics. I always wanted to be a machinist. And that was my career once. So I went to work for Southern Pacific Railroad in Los Angeles because they had a class that they taught machinery. So I would put in my 8 hours in the field, and then I would put 4 hours in the machine shop.
Thought of something else, too. I mean, you mentioned what a great ball player your father was. Is that something that got passed down to you? Did you play baseball?
No, I didn't. That was very upsetting to Dad.
Well, I'm just guessing. You probably had a fair amount of Japanese-American classmates.
A lot of them. I had run around with twin boys, Yo and Sho. Yes, we had that, and their sister was in my class. So, yes, I had a lot of nice Japanese friends.
I had Sho on this program probably over a decade ago.
Is that right?
Sho Katayama, yeah.
Right.
And if I'm not mistaken, he and his twin both served in the 442nd Regimental Combat Team.
Correct.
Well, and we're getting ahead of ourselves. So the reason I ask you that question, obviously, is even though you graduate in 1939, a couple years later, December 7th, 1941, do you remember where you were and how you found out about that?
I was back on the ranch. As a mechanic, tractor driver, truck driver, whatever you want to call it, because I had married in 1940.
Well, I guess I better hit that first if we want to stay chronologically. So you graduate high school in 1939, you get married in 1940. That's pretty quick.
That's pretty quick, yeah. I was working for the Southern Pacific in Los Angeles. I got married.
How'd you meet your wife?
We went to school together. I was a senior and she was a freshman.
Robbing the cradle.
No, we was only 1 year apart. I started early, and then I skipped a grade in high school. I never was a junior. I went from a sophomore to a senior.
You're just that smart, huh?
And made it in 3 years.
Not bad.
I had to catch my sister because she got 1 grade ahead of me.
Now I'm really lost.
Yeah.
You started late and early at the same time almost, it sounds like.
Yeah, we did. We started school together, and so I was a little bit young. And we started the first grade in Orange Cove. Christmas come around, and they moved her to the second, so she's 1 grade ahead of me. It only took me 12 years to catch her.
And I'm sure you let her know about it, too.
Oh, yes.
Well, and I know that you ended up enjoying 70 years of marriage, so I should probably hear about why your wife was so special, why it was so important to you that you got married at such a young age.
Well, of course, we went to school together at least for 1 year. As I say, I was working down to Los Angeles, and it made commute very, very difficult, you know, especially when you just had a little Model A coupe. So anyway, we decided to get married. We had dated for a couple of years, and we decided to get married. Moved to Los Angeles with me, and we stayed down there for a while till I finished up with the machinist, and then I came back to the ranch, where again, we were furnished everything, home and everything else to go with it. In fact, we had a nice home.
This is out in Orange Cove?
Out in the country on the ranch.
So that's where you were on December 7th, 1941.
That's correct, because so many of the men were going into the service, and we were running short, so we brought in Braceros. That was a very good program, very good program. Dad would tell me I need 15 men today, and I could tow boxes in the old truck and put sideboards on and tow some boxes in there from set on and go down to the camp and get the 15 men and let them know we was going to use them maybe for a week, 2 weeks, where we thought we needed them. And if it was a good crew, we want the same crew every time, you know. They would give us their box lunches, and at lunch they'd have an hour off to rest and have their lunch, and then at 5 o'clock we took them back to the camp. That was an excellent program. Excellent.
Well, and I think you're kind of hinting at a reality that if they weren't here, if they weren't brought over from Mexico to do that important work, then the production of the agricultural industry wouldn't have been able to keep up.
That's right. They couldn't have been able, especially in the dried grapes, you know, making into raisins. Now, all our stuff was fresh shipped. We had nothing other than the dried figs. The fresh figs we packed, but the dried figs, we dried them and stacked them up, sold them locally.
The other thing that comes to mind, so you mentioned in high school, you're running around with Yo and Sho. And you knew their sister, and there are other Japanese-American families in the area.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you saw what happened to them after Pearl Harbor.
Yes, that was sad. In fact, our neighbors was a Japanese family. The man had got injured, and he tried to commit suicide, and he didn't fake. That got him into the doctor and got him taken care of, and then he had a wreck. He was in the hills, and I think it was deliberate. But she was very good. We had a plum orchard across the street from him. She'd gather that wood up for fire. And when I had to take her to the train, when they shipped them out, She had three children, and they were trained, and they wouldn't let her keep a butcher knife. So I still got that butcher knife.
What happened to their property, their home, all of that?
Well, they didn't have any property. They were workers. That particular family didn't have any workers, you know. But like you on show, their property was really taken good care of. Most of the people kept the property up. I know you on show. It was just like when they left us, you know, very good.
So someone stepped in and maintained it for them so it would be there when they got back.
Another Japanese guy that said I like real well was Bill Sheba. He was in my class, and as far as I know, his property was well-maintained while he was gone, too.
Was it something that emotionally, intellectually, you had to wrestle with at the time, that here these classmates of yours who were born in America just like you were being treated so much differently?
Well, yes, it was. We only had one incident that I know of, and I knew when that was a family there. Well, the husband had a radio contact with Japan, and the big planes was flying around, and they finally located it, put him in jail, and he committed suicide. Yeah, but most the families that I knew, they were all just good people.
Did you ever find out what happened to the family you had to take to the train station?
No, I know the girl. I don't know what happened to the boy. They had two girls. One was young. Boy was in the middle. The girl stayed back east someplace and went to work there. I never saw him after that.
All right. So, you know, the war effort is underway. A lot of guys your age are going. And I'm sure you have access to exemptions, right, for being agriculturally necessary?
Yeah, I had exemptions there. So I didn't go in right away.
You're also newly married, too.
Yeah, I was suddenly married, yeah.
So is that something that weighed on you over time?
Yes, it did. It weighed on me. I always felt I should go as like everybody else, you know. But
were you hearing stories about some of your classmates and what they were doing?
Oh, yeah. Most of my classmates went to Germany. A couple of them were pilots, and we got shot down. And I didn't hear much about the ones that went to the Pacific.
Were there any guys from your class who were killed over there?
Yes. Yes, several of them. One real good friend of mine, he was killed in Italy.
But so you're keeping the ranch going, doing this work, and the newspaper's telling you so-and-so is here, and this is what happened to him.
Oh, yeah.
So what changed for you? How did you eventually end up in the Army?
Of course, I could see the draft coming, you know. Sooner or later, it's coming, you know. And believe it or not, I enlisted in the Navy. And I went up to Camp Beale. That's where they were being inducted at the time. They found a murmur in my heart. They kept me there 3 days, and I was working giving shots to the guys that was going in. And so 3 days later, they sent me to San Francisco. And you know the Navy man, what he done to me? He stamped right across that where it said limited duty Navy. He stamped general duty Army. I said, I enlisted in the Navy. He said, we're not taking anybody to the Navy today. So I ended up in the Army. Thank God.
That probably wasn't your attitude at the time, though.
No, it wasn't my attitude but one trip over, it changed.
Uh-huh. How did your wife feel about all of that? How'd you handle it with her?
It was okay with her because our son was born, and he was just a baby when I shipped out.
So you're shipping out, and you're leaving behind a wife and a newborn son.
Yes.
That couldn't have been easy.
It wasn't very easy, no. But she understood. She's a good Christian, and she understood the necessity that we had to win this war.
Was there a question in your mind as to whether you'd make it back to see them again?
I didn't give it any thought, to tell you the truth about it. I just knew I'd make it back.
The fact that we're talking to him is evidence of that, but that does not mean he didn't experience close calls overseas. We'll hear about one of those and some very moving moments he experienced in Japan when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.